Welcome to Voices in Value-Based Care. I'm Matt Fusen. Thanks for tuning in. The movement of value-based care is revolutionizing how healthcare providers get reimbursed for delivery of care. On this program, we explore stories from the field about how real organizations are dealing with this change. As always, you can follow the show on Twitter at hashtag VoicesInVBC and follow SPH on Twitter at SPHAnalytics. Super excited to have on the show today Dr. Glenn Loomis, Chief Medical Officer of Vocalto. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
It's great to be here. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Excellent. Thank you. So with all of our guests, we like to get to know them a little bit at the beginning and hear kind of your path to where you got to now and the interesting little tidbits along the way there. So if you don't mind, give us a little dissertation on yourself.
Sure. I'm a family doctor by background. Grew up in the Midwest, went to college at Ohio State, big Buckeye fan. Then I went in the Air Force for 4 years, including doing some work with them on a EMR for occupational health. Eventually left the Air Force and went into family medicine teaching and was a residency director. Also ended up doing my first Epic implementation at that time, and then eventually went over onto the administrative side, and I've been doing that really for the last 15 years, including 4 Epic implementations and 1 Cerner implementation at different systems around the country. And then over the past 8 months, I have moved into working for a startup on voice recognition and how we're going to apply it in healthcare in order to automate the note writing process for physicians and others in healthcare. Sort of a wide background, but I've had a lot of fun over the years.
Awesome. That's excellent. Love the wide background, partially because I've had a wide background, but always means we can dig into more topics. I know kind of the foundation of your platform. We talked previously about, artificial intelligence or AI. For myself and for many people in the listening audience, we've heard a lot about it, but most of it is either media or movies or something. Could you tell us just a basic understanding of what is AI?
Sure. One of the definitions that's used a lot is that AI is intelligence demonstrated by machines in contrast to natural intelligence displayed by humans. What that really means is we as humans are trying to teach machines how to do the things that we do sort of intuitively, and that involves a lot of math and other algorithms, trying to teach the machine how to calculate in the machine way what our brains do easily. And it's broken up really into 4 or so areas. One is called machine learning, and that is sort of widespread in a lot of industries now. A subset of that is something called deep learning, where we're trying to mimic the brain's processes more adequately than machine learning, which is much more simple. Then there's natural language processing and natural language understanding, which is what we're doing at Vocalto. And then finally, there's machine vision and some other things like that, where we're teaching machines to see, hear, touch, smell, whatever, and try to interpret what those inputs mean. There's also 2 concepts that everybody should understand. One is called general AI, which is sort of the Terminator, right? Where AI has learned everything and is better than humans and takes over the world. And then, that's very far away if it'll ever happen. And then there's what's called specific AI, where we're really beginning to make an impact with specific AI, which is AI targeted at specific problems or specific areas of learning, et cetera. And over the next 10 years, that specific AI is going to have a huge impact in medicine, but in almost every other area of our lives.
That is extremely helpful. Thank you. I think, the fact that AI is an umbrella term for many different slices of it gets lost often, right? It's just AI, and then everybody instantly thinks of the Terminator, and we're about to go extinct. And it sounds like most of that's tied to that deep learning segment of it. So from previous types of technology to now, and leveraging the specific slice of AI that you're planning on leverage, what's different? What brings this capability to us now? Because what you're talking about doing is applying kind of a new technology to an age-old problem, documentation. So what makes it possible now that it wasn't, you know, 5-10 years ago?
Well, AI has taken a lot of leaps. First of all, because of the software and the programming that's happened, there's been, you know, some huge leaps forward over the last 10 years or so. There's what was called the AI winter between the 60s when it was all in vogue and then, you know, really didn't move forward a lot until the 2010s. And then also hardware. I mean, AI with all the calculations that it requires takes huge amounts of memory in your computer and huge amounts of processing power that we really weren't able to accomplish until the last couple of years. And so those two things together have now brought us to where we are, where we can actually begin to apply AI to some of the problems where we think it can really be, you know, effective.
Right. Makes sense, you know, especially as you I travel a lot and you see AWS promoted all over the place, right? Amazon Web Services. And before you know it, they're going to have everything on either there or a handful of other platforms. But yes, the hardware side of the house has made leaps and bounds over the last few years for sure. So now that we know that, tell us about what your company is going to do. How are you going to, you know, apply this new technology and change the environment for the clinicians? Some of this that gets interesting is also, you know, the pain that the clinicians feel right now around this documentation and all of that. So it'll be interesting to hear your approach.
Yeah, so the reason I left being a chief physician executive and moved over to Bocalto to try to work on the problem of documentation is that for, you know, the last 10 years since EMRs have really become in vogue, all I hear from my physicians is how difficult EMRs have made practice, and I don't disagree with them at all. They've helped some things, but they've really slowed us down dramatically, and there has to be a better way than all the point and click that we're doing at the moment. And so one of the things that I believe AI is going to do is going to be applied to a lot of what I would call sort of mindless, mind-numbing, repetitive tasks, whether it's from the front desk or it's docs having to do the same dictations over and over again. And so that's what AI is really best at the moment, is if you can teach it something that is repetitive, it can continue to do it over and over again. And natural language processing and understanding has gotten so much better that I decided that there has to be a better way to do documentation. And so what we're attempting to do is put a microphone in the room, let the doctor come in, sit face to face with the patient, talk to the patient, and let the computer actually do the transcript of everything that happened in that encounter, which the transcript part is reasonably easy now. But then taking that transcript and applying other AI technologies, machine learning, and some other things to then create a note, which is a summary of that transcript that would look like a soap note that any of us would, you know, any physician from the last 50 years would recognize. And so that's what we're attempting to do and making significant progress on.
You know, it's interesting. You read a lot, you hear a lot about how much time clinicians are spending outside of working hours, right, in the evening or on the weekend. And I think generally in the public is like, how is that possible, right? How is it 2 hours every night, 4 hours every weekend? And as I've been involved, not only in this business, but, you know, go see my PCP and other specialists, I generally tell them what I do and ask a couple questions. And it is very consistent answer that, yes, this is it. And a little bit scarier than that is how many have said to me that if I had the choice of what direction to take career-wise to do over again, I wouldn't be frontline medicine. It's just too painful at this point. It's not really what I got into it for. And that's extremely scary.
Yeah, and if you ask patients, they'll tell you also that my doctor never looks at me anymore. He sits and looks at the computer and types away while I talk to the back of his head or the side of his head. And they're not happy either. And so, you know, nobody's happy with the way things are at the moment. And I think that's where AI really comes into play, is in things in practice where we can improve efficiency, effectiveness, and caregiver experience in order to decrease the burnout that's so pervasive right now. Because I think everybody, nurses, doctors, are very burnt out at the moment. And a lot of it comes back to the documentation, which is really very little of it is needed for quality or for communicating between practitioners or other things. Most of it is purely a billing function. We're just documenting things from a billing standpoint. And seems like, you know, some other technology could manage that part for us, and we could just focus on that face-to-face interaction, because what most people went into medicine or healthcare for was that they wanted those interactions, and they wanted to be able to listen to a patient and to extract what's the problem with the patient and then figure out how to fix that problem. And that feeling of being a healer has been overwhelmed by the feeling, as docs say to me all the time, of being the most highly paid ward secretary of all time. So,
and this is also happening. So it's kind of a double whammy for clinicians, because with a lot of value-based care contracts, more and more is coming tied to patient experience. So it's, yeah, you do have to document all this so you can get paid for, you know, some percentage of your reimbursement. But then you better make the person happy on the other side, because that's going to tie to another percentage of your reimbursement. You're kind of, you know, stuck in between. And knowing where we're headed with population, right, and the age of the population, the thought of fewer doctors and nurses than steady state or more also gets very concerning. So this type of stuff, while it may not seem like the sexiest piece of new technology, the problem you're solving is absolutely critical to the future state of our country and healthcare. So are you working currently with organizations implementing? I know you're a startup phase, you guys are early on. Kind of tell us where you're at in your company's journey.
Yeah, so we have signed a contract with a fairly large health system to do some pilot testing with them over the next few months, and we hope to have a working multi-specialty pilot. We're starting with one specialty, cardiology, and then moving to other specialties. We hope to have a multi-specialty version of this working by summer, and probably fully commercialized for, you know, a couple other pilot sites after that, and then a fully commercialized version by hopefully early 2021.
Oh, excellent. That's not too far off. It's amazing how time flies. Before you know it, we'll be back at this, hopefully get an update from you.
You know, anything new, anything that you're creating from scratch, you know, you think you'll make those timelines, but you never know how
that's
goes.
A good point. That is a very good point. We all know that. I wish it followed the business books that I read at the beginning of my career that painted a bit of a picture that was unrealistic, I learned.
That'd be great.
It would be. So as we move kind of down the path with this technology and AI, in our previous discussions, we were talking about a couple of things, right? A short term and a long term. Short term being robot process automation, long term being more than that. Kind of give us your perspectives on that. I know for our audience sake, too, that you know, you really dug in and took courses at MIT and really focused on, okay, I'm going to get as far along as I can being an expert here. So tell us a little bit more about your experience getting yourself ready for this and then what you think is coming our way.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to take a course with MIT or through MIT that really helped me do a lot of digging into applying AI technologies in business. I'm not a programmer, so I can't get in there and write the code, but I do understand, I think, the tenets of the different portions. And what I would say to everybody is, if you don't know what we're talking about when we say robot process automation, you should know that. It's RPA. It's basically where a computer functions as a robot, not a robot with hands and feet, but a robot in terms of being able to do processes for you. And so many of the processes in medicine, a lot of billing processes, a lot of pre-authorization processes, those kind of things can be done by a robot because they're basically logging into websites and sitting in for long periods of time waiting. And, you know, a robot can do that 24/7, 365. They don't take vacation. They don't take coffee breaks, you know. And so that is something that's going to be coming and making a huge difference, I think, in all of our practices very shortly. And by very shortly, I mean, I was looking into doing it where I just left over a year ago. So I think a lot of people are already going down that path. I think there's a lot of other things coming and turn in quality and in revenue cycle both, but I think on the quality side, there's a lot of people working on how to standardize the work that we do, how to make sure that we are implementing guidelines correctly, and how we help physicians do that. So I think that'll be coming over the next 5 to 10 years. I think that's a little bit harder and it's going to take longer. But pretty much somebody is working on almost any problem you can think of in medicine right now, trying to apply AI to it in one way or another.
What is the clinician's take on all this that you've been, you know, worked with in the past or are doing currently? You know, a couple different things. One, there's been massive change, obviously, right? And that massive change in the last 10 years, as we just talked about, has not made people happy. So I know when we're out talking to people from a vendor perspective, there's a lot of hesitancy, right? Where it's like, yeah, I've heard for now a decade that my life was going to get better, all this was going to make it better, and it's actually, you know, done the opposite. So now, oh, here's the new thing, here's AI, and you're going to solve all my problems with it. As you're working with clinicians, what generally is their feeling that you're seeing with more technology, new technology, things like we're talking about today? Because, of course, without their buy-in and usage, right, then you could have the best technology in the world, as we know, but it won't matter.
That's absolutely right. So I think if you really look at it, you've got 10% of people who have this idea about AI that it's, you know, going to be horrible and take over the world, and they're uninformed, but they have a definite opinion. And then you have a 10% that are still fairly uninformed, but have this opinion that AI is going to be the best thing since sliced bread. And then you've got the 80% in the middle who, quite frankly, I would say 80% of clinicians know very little about AI. And if they know anything, they know it at a very superficial level. And so I think, to be honest, I think there's this wave of AI sort of taking over medicine and healthcare that people don't even know is coming. And I would urge people to be on the lookout, educate yourself, and begin to learn things, because, you know, it really is happening, whether we like it or not. I think the key, though, for anybody like me who's trying to put a product out in the market, is you've got to prove to people. You can't just say, oh, we're going to make your life better. We've got to be able to prove in hard facts that No, it reduced documentation time by 90% or 95% or 99%, that it increased productivity by X percent, that it, you know, whatever. There are many measures that we're looking at. Patient satisfaction went up, employee satisfaction went up. You know, all of those kind of things, I think, are critical for us to be able to prove and not just, you know, give them the usual, it's going to be okay. You know, I'm just not good with that.
That's right. How do you think, so we talk kind of short near term, but one of the things, anytime we're talking AI, and we hear it a lot more, right, because the media is the self-driving cars, right? That's the one that's really big right now. I just read that I think it's Uber or it might be another company is starting their cars in DC this week or something. So that continues to go. And along with that, there's always the discussion of, well, what about the displacement of the people, right? I know I feel strongly different between those things and applying AI in the healthcare world. But that's probably a topic as people are listening is, okay, well, is this now just going to, you know, wipe out 30% of the jobs or not? I'd love to get your feeling on that.
Yeah, I think it's a sticky wicket, if you will. I think there will be job change for sure, because you absolutely can automate a number of things that we have people doing today. To be honest, we can probably automate it so they're done faster, more, I don't want to say better, but at least they're done the same way every time, and there's a lot less turnover. And so those all take costs out of the system, right? And that's a good thing.
Right.
But it will impact people's jobs. I don't think nurses at the bedside, physicians, et cetera, are going to be impacted, you know, for a while. But I think down the road, you're going to see certain specialties in medicine will need less of, and they'll end up we'll have to transition people to where we need them. We know that we have a huge physician shortage over the next 20, 30, 50 years. So hopefully this will alleviate some of that. The problem is that it's not going to alleviate it across the board. It's going to be definitely more impactful in certain specialties rather than others.
Right. And I kind of share that general thought. In this case, it's one, it's going to help fill shortage that we already know exists and will only grow. And two, it'll shift the resources into doing other things. I don't think that anytime we're looking at our healthcare universe, let's say in the United States over the next 50 years, we're always going to need people. It's just, what are those people going to be doing, right? And in a lot of cases, they'll be able to add higher value to the system, while, to your point, this AI and everything else has taken away the low-hanging fruit, right? So same people that are in mix and everything, they're just applying value to the system in a different way. So I don't think, if anybody's listening, that Dr. Loomis is unleashing, the AI on the world that brings it all down. But I did want to touch on that. What do you think we can expect from companies like your company over the next 10 years or so? Do you envision a growth path where you just keep moving in specialties? Do you think it'll be very specialty focused because the technology and the need to be specialty focused? Is it more of a generalized technology that you can apply across the board? One of the reasons I ask is because of our current problems right now with so much siloed data, right? And it's, well, I got this vendor for this thing and I got this vendor for this thing, and propagating that doesn't seem to be what will ultimately get us out of some of our, especially interoperability challenges.
Yeah, so clearly one of the biggest problems for AI in this country in healthcare versus, for example, in China, is that we are so siloed in our data. We need large data lakes, if you will, where AI can work on hundreds of thousands or millions of records. And they have that in China, and they're making leaps and bounds faster progress than we are, because they just have the data to be able to work on better than we do. But I think we're going to make a lot of progress, not just in the natural language side that I'm looking at, but also on the quality side. And I actually think I know a couple companies that are working on the idea that once we have large enough lakes of data, they're going to be able to do something called patients like me. So in other words, the doctor at the bedside, faced with the patient that's this age, this sex, this race, this set of medications, this set of medical problems, they would be able to put those in and sort of push a button. It would go out and look at all the patients that it has in its huge data lake and come back to you and say, the most efficient and the most effective treatment is this. And that really gets us a long way towards personalized medicine, when you can begin to say, oh, I shouldn't treat the hypertension in this patient with these other problems the way JNC says, because it's no good. They need this very specific medicine that I normally wouldn't think of. And boy, wouldn't that make a difference, rather than what we do have to do now is a lot of guesswork and a lot of, try this, try that until you get to the point where things work. If you could take out that 6 or 8 months that it takes you to get there, you know, that would be a huge help for all of us.
Absolutely, across the board, cost-wise, also patient quality, right, and clinician experience, it would be a game changer for sure. First, we just got to get past this pesky interoperability challenge that we have, which I was just reading about today with 21st Century Cures Act should be coming out soon, and it finally, hopefully, keeps the teeth in it that it had in the proposed rule, but we will see.
Severely needed.
It absolutely is, and if anybody listening, you might be out by the time this is out. Dr. Loomis, any parting thoughts or anything along those lines that you'd like to share with the audience before we wrap up?
The only thing I'd like to say is that the interesting thing about using AI in medicine is that I think it really has the potential to actually return humanity to medicine. You know, we've kind of become automatons in medicine and lost the passion a little bit and lost that human interaction, human touch and face-to-face interaction. And I think that by getting rid of some of these mind-numbing tasks that we do over and over again that, you know, in our minds we say, oh, anybody could do that. And why am I doing that at my level or whatever? I think by getting rid of that, we can inject some passion and some more heartfelt interactions with our patients than really are happening today. I mean, you see everybody complaining about it, nurses, doctors, patients. And so I think we have a unique opportunity to use AI, use machines to actually make us more human, which I think is an interesting proposition.
I do too. I was explaining that I was smiling because it's great, right? We're going to leverage AI to make the experience more human at the end of the day for the humans that are involved. I love that approach and that thought process. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been great. And like many of my guests, would love to catch up with you again in the future, see how things are transitioning and going for your company, but also across the board on AI and healthcare in general. So thank you for joining. And for everybody listening, thank you for tuning in. You can learn more about the show and on the programs page of healthcarenowradio.com. And lend your voice to the conversation, as always, on Twitter at #VoicesInVBC. And be sure to follow SPH on Twitter at SPH Analytics. For now, I'm Matt Fusen, bringing you Voices in Value-Based Care. You should hear. Until next time, have a great week.